We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Welcome back to the Munganass St. Louis Honda and Mitsubishi Sports Open Line.
Munganass pre-owned on South Limburg.
On America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
Well, the Cardinals sweep the Brewers, a 5-2 win today. Adam Wainwright's 150th win as a member of the Cardinals. That's pretty impressive. Blues open up their second round Stanley Cup playoff series against the Stars tomorrow night at Enterprise Center at 8:30. It's the Munganass St. Louis Honda Mitsubishi Sports Open Line. Chris Raby with you on KMOX. And, man, pretty incredible to think about Adam Wainwright and what he did today. He becomes the fifth Cardinal pitcher to win 150 games wearing the birds on the bat. And I think to last season and to a conversation we had with Adam this spring when he said, you know, I was really close to just retiring last year, to just saying that I couldn't do it anymore. And then all of a sudden I could throw more and I could recover more quickly after days that I threw, and then I could throw back-to-back days. And then, you know, all of a sudden something clicked. And all of a sudden I was able to get back to a normal routine and eventually get back onto the mound. And he pitched at the end of last year one of the biggest games of the season from the standpoint of keeping the Cardinals alive in the playoff race, that Sunday night game against the Dodgers at Busch Stadium, and then obviously signs the contract in the offseason to come back for another year. So Wayno now 2-2, ERA under 4, and congratulations on win number 150 today. We'll take a break, come back. Chris Kerber is going to join us live in our next segment. We'll talk all things Blues and Stars, plus get Kerb's take on what happened last night in the Sharks Knights game. It's the second hour of the Munganass St. Louis Honda and Mitsubishi Sports Open Line. Chris Raby with you, Mike Anderson in the KMOX studios, and we're back in a moment on your home for the Cardinals and Blues, KMOX.
Welcome back to the Munganass St. Louis Honda and Mitsubishi Sports Open Line.
Munganass St. Louis Mitsubishi on South Limburg.
On America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
So on the ice for the St. Louis Blues, Ryan O'Reilly talking to his guys. Shen and Bouwmeester, Petrangelo and Steen. Ryan Little will take the faceoff for the Jets. O'Reilly sticks her down. Blues get to it. O'Reilly takes it to the wall. Zamboni, and bring on round two. The St. Louis Blues beat the Winnipeg Jets 3-2 in game six. They win the series 4-2.
Sports Open Line on the eve of Game 1 of the second round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Chris Raby with you, Mike Anderson back in the studio, and we say hello to the man on the call who hopefully will have, oh, about 12 more calls, exactly 12 more calls of Bring Out the Zamboni. That's Chris Kerber. What's up, Kerbs?
Mr. Raby, how you doing today?
Doing great, man. And just when we spend a week and a half talking about, you know, or 2 weeks talking about the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs and how, you know, the emotion of the NHL postseason at any point, even in the first minute of the first game of the first playoff series, is greater than I think any other comp in any other sport. It gets ratcheted up to another level last night in San Jose.
It did, and it never should have. All right, it was a bad call. I'm amazed in sports. Where, like, let's face it, is there any other profession in sports? Is there any other role in a professional sporting event that essentially gets more passes, more, and really, truly no accountability than officiating? I mean, look, we get all over, and justifiably so, how embarrassing Russell Westbrook was to the NBA, his city, himself, his organization the other night. How embarrassing it is that that the Oklahoma City Thunder couldn't find a way to solve that situation as a team, as an organization, as a newspaper, before it gets to that embarrassing level. And yet, what we can't figure out is how a referee will say on the ice to somebody, he got him in the face. Video 100% proves that to be wrong. And yet, the National Hockey League was celebrating that comeback. Now, look, it was exciting. It was great. But it never should have happened. And I actually would like to see a little more time spent on how do we make sure that this doesn't happen to another team again than saying, wow, what a comeback by San Jose. But I'm even more amazed, Chris, that how many people go, oh, well, you shouldn't have allowed four goals. Wait a minute. Like how come there's all these different momentum swings in sports and a poorly thrown interception and a poorly timed interception or a reliever, you know, just not enough spin on the hanging curveball, and that's where it goes, right? And that's all part of the game. But officials' bad calls are not in terms of the actual impact of the game. People always say, well, you got to overcome that. That to me is one of the biggest jokes of sports.
Yeah, and we'll get to the actual officials and the mechanism of what happened in a moment. But, you know, I was just talking to Mike Anderson. Like, regardless of if that's a five or if that's a two, if you're Cody Eakin, man, what are you doing? Up 3-0 in their building. And I think the reason that stands out so much to me, Curbs, is the discipline and the structure the Blues played with amidst emotion when they were down in game five especially and did not allow any opening for Winnipeg or did not
so
allow
we're gonna
Winnipeg
now say
to
that
make
the,
it worse.
Yeah, but Chris, we're going to now say that the ref's bad call is Cody Eakin's fault?
Well, I'm not saying that, but that's definitely a penalty,
playing,
right? It's at least a two-minute power play, right? What if San Jose scores there and then that lights the fire?
If he doesn't fall down, that's not even a penalty.
Yeah, and okay. I'll tell you what, I thought Marchessault was right on the money after the game when he said that the most egregious thing to him was when the official skated over and said, did you see him fall? That looked really bad. Like, if his head doesn't hit the ice, then it's completely different, right?
How many times have you heard me in a call say he's penalized for hitting too hard? It's sometimes the impact. Now, look, yeah, the level of violence and the level of impact.
The fact that he was knocked unconscious because his head hit the ice.
Yeah. Well, okay. And he did because of the cross check. So that's the out that the NHL has and that the supervisor of officials had yesterday. But I'm going to use another example. This is what the National Hockey League and other sports leagues have to understand is the fans' level of frustration in this. You've got your customers buying all in, okay? And when you are a hockey fan and you watch Fogle cross-check TJ Oshie into the boards and get a two-minute minor and Oshie is out long-term, that is a play that is 100 times more dangerous than what we saw last night. So then you see what happened last night, right? And you see a five-minute major in a game misconduct. Now, the game misconduct is an automatic when a major is handed out for cross-checking, okay? So the game misconduct part doesn't really mean much. That's 100%. That's an automatic, just like a game misconduct is an automatic with a head hit that results in injury, okay? So the point is how are you as a fan, and let's relate it to the catch rule in football. The problem wasn't so much the catch rule itself. It was that as fans, it made no sense. And so this is where they've got to figure out something where you would still rather get it right. And even if it's just in the playoffs, even if only in the playoffs, you wanted to implement a rule where major penalties are 100% reviewed automatically, then do it. But what it does is the few times that has actually come up in the playoffs so far, it's worth the 2 minutes to make sure that you're not getting a call that impacts a game as much as the non-pass interference call in the Rams-Saints football game did. So this isn't it's one example of a bigger issue that really does need to be addressed.
And, I mean, even like looking at the Blues as an example, and Chris Kerber is with us on the GL International Realty guest line, like that – delay of game on Joel Edmondson was clearly not a delay of game. And that's black and white. Yeah. It hit 100%. Ryan O'Reilly's stick. And it's such a fine line that if Winnipeg scores on that power play or if the Blues don't score after killing that penalty off, that becomes the narrative all summer if the Blues end up losing that series. And that is black and white. And if you have someone, you don't even have to be in the war room. I've talked to you about, I think every offside should be immediately looked at. 98 times out of 100, 99 out of 100, it won't be offside on a goal. It'll be a good goal like the NFL does. But that is black and white. And to call
it goes back to not so much the offside. Because what you don't want to do is in a game that is based on flow, have stoppages of play.
And my point was going to be the NFL, black and white stuff is reviewed, right? Inbounds, out of bounds. Black and white, Joel Edmondson, delay of game. But how many times this year, Curbs, in a game that you and Joey did, you did 82 regular season games, you've now done 6 playoff games, did a handful of preseason games, how many times was offside after a goal actually challenged? I would venture to guess that...
About 10.
Okay, so yeah, 99% of goals, it's clearly onside. And from the time the goal is scored and the celebration and the puck is dropped, I think you could have someone upstairs, like in the NFL, who just says, yep, good goal. All good. Play on. But those 10 times that there's a question, review it.
Yeah, what I'm saying is take offside out of it. Every goal. And now let me give you a flip side where this could actually help television, okay? Make every goal reviewable. Okay. No matter what, it doesn't matter if it was kicked in, put in. This one's interesting. Last night, Las Vegas got a goal that to me was clearly a high stick, and it was allowed. And I'm going to tell you why it was clearly a high stick based on the replays that we saw. If a player that is 6'2" puts his arms out and his arms are straight out from his shoulders, you know you're definitely above 4 feet, right? So that stick is above 4 feet, which is the crossbar. So whether it's kicked in, whether it's high sticked in, whether it's put in with the hand, whether it was offside, whether it was goaltender interference, you know, you could put a rule in where your job is just to make sure every goal is automatically reviewed. And then the few that take a little bit longer, that's when you call down and you let everybody know the goal is being reviewed. Okay, now, where I think this could help TV is, for a sport that's really doing well and growing a TV audience, especially after goals, which is the whole point, I'd like to see a little more time given so the TV networks, the broadcasters, the producers and directors have more time to replay the goal rather than once or twice and you get right back in it. So I wouldn't mind after a goal. There's automatically a 30-second window that kicks in that allows the TV audience to see the replays or even, frankly, for that matter, the fans inside the building to see the replays before you turn around and drop the puck.
No, I like that. I think that's something that makes a lot of sense. Chris Kerber is with us, Blues and Stars open up tomorrow night. So how do you kind of size up this series as we wait to get it going and knowing what I guess we don't know and the unpredictability of this Blues team this year and their arc and how crazy the Stanley Cup playoffs have been, how do you even begin to try and assess this matchup?
Well, I mean, I don't think it's hard. I think you can look at some strengths and weaknesses of both teams and try and figure out, you know, how those strengths and weaknesses are going to play a role, you know, and that is the, that's the bottom line there is, you know, let's start in goal. Well, right now, neither team has shown a weakness in goal. All right. The only thing that you might give Ben Bishop an edge in is experience at this point. A 3-time Vezina finalist and the guy that's been to the finals. Okay. And he's playing extremely well. You know, but when I look at the goaltending, for example, if you're the St. Louis Blues and you can get the offensive game that you want, which is get it down low and grind it, work it behind the net, get a forecheck and a cycle going. You then force Ben Bishop to drop down into the butterfly. All of a sudden, the big goaltender is not quite as big. All right? And you could see that in some of the replays. And if you get him to lean forward, holes open up. Even the big guys have holes. So You know, in one respect, the Blues can negate some of the size of Ben Bishop by playing their style of game, if it's possible. So, you know, I think that's just kind of where you start, and then you go from there. Both teams are very mobile defensemen. Both teams are defensemen that like to jump into the rush. Now, the Blues did not do that as much in the first-round series, but I think that's because the opponent really didn't allow for that to happen. I think you had to play smarter stay-at-home defense against the Winnipeg Jets. I think the Dallas Stars are going to give the Blues more opportunities to do that. So, you know, there's that aspect of it. So while the Blues defense did not score a goal in round one, I don't anticipate that being the case here in round two. Then you look at the forward side of things, and look, the St. Louis Blues are 1-3 against the Dallas Stars in the regular season, but Jimmy Benn went off in a couple of those games. You're going to have to contain him. Now, can you? I don't know. If you don't, you're going to have a hard time in this series. If you do slow him down just a little bit and you put some of the pressure on the other guys, then you increase your chances of winning. Then I think the St. Louis Blues depth at forwards is what could really pay off, especially if Robbie Fabry is in the lineup on that fourth line. And all of the indications based on Craig Berube's press conferences seem to make it look like it is, because they at some point in time, the Dallas Stars are going to want to attack, and they're going to get their chances because they've got some good skill. But the St. Louis Blues have four forward lines that the Stars are going to have to defend against. At some point in time, you're going to get a mismatch that should favor the St. Louis Blues. When those occur is when you have to capitalize on your chances.
Yeah, and I think you make the ultimate point that, like, the Blues have stuck to their style, and I think that's been really the common thread throughout this incredible run since the start of January. If they're up, if they're down, if they're on the road, if they're backed in a corner, they've played the way that has gotten them to this point, and they haven't wavered, they haven't panicked.
No, they really haven't. And I think a big game for the St. Louis Blues, somebody asked me on a show I was doing the other day, I can't remember which show it was, but somebody asked me the other day, you know, is there something in the first round that, you know, increases your belief in what this team can do? Obviously, outside of what just winning the series. And I thought the response after losing the 6-3 game, you know, it was a really big one for the St. Louis Blues. It was really the only game that sort of got out of hand in that series. And even then, I know while the score eventually, you know, was one of the things that jumps off the page at you in that series that did get out of hand. But the reality of it is at one point in time, you know, you did have the Blues pulling to within one goal there. I mean, or at least they got to within two. They made it 4-2. Well, they made it 3-2 on the Tarasenko goal. And then it was when Tanev scored after that, and then Bufflin scored to make it 5-2. And then, once again, they battled back to make it 5-3 on a goal by Alexander Steen. But to me, it was the response in the next game that really mattered there, and that was game four. And even though the Blues lost that game 2-1, they lost it in overtime. They lost it, and they still had a terrific goaltending performance. You know, where Jordan Binnington made 33 saves in regulation. I mean, then the Jets peppered him with five shots in overtime to get to 39 total in the game. That response game to me showed me another level of understanding and resilience. And honestly, I thought it was a response in game four, and then the acceptance that overtime could go either way that helped the St. Louis Blues get back to it and win game five of that series.
Chris Garbert, we look forward to seeing you over at the rink tomorrow morning and cannot wait. In about 25 hours and 15 minutes, we'll be dropping the puck on game one of the second round.
We'll be ready to go.
Hi, man. Appreciate it. See you in the morning.
Okay, man. Talk to you later. See you.
All right. That's Chris Kerber joining us on the Munganest, St. Louis Honda and Mitsubishi Sports Open Line. We'll get a national perspective. Brian Lawton of NHL Network with me next. We'll ask him about last night in San Jose and the Blues and Stars next on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Munganest St. Louis Honda and Mitsubishi Sports Open Line.
Munganest St. Louis Honda on South Limburg.
On America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
Well, let's talk a little Stanley Cup playoff hockey with Brian Lawton of the NHL Network. former player, GM, agent. You can watch NHL Network analyst Brian and the rest of the crew on NHL Tonight, which will air before and after every Stanley Cup playoff game. Brian, how are you, man? Has everyone come down around there off of the high of that Sharks-Knights Game 7 last night?
Well, I think everybody would like to come down off of that high from last night. It's been exhausting, to be honest with you, but the fact of the matter is we're all getting ramped up for another Game 7 tonight. It's incredible.
Yeah, it is, and it's just remarkable. I've talked about this throughout the playoffs, the emotion in all of these games. It's not news to anyone, but you know, it can be the first period of the first game of the first round of the playoffs, and the emotion and magnitude of it just seems to be unrivaled by anything else in sports, all things considered.
You know, I couldn't agree with you more. The first round of the National Hockey League, year in and year out, it never seems to disappoint. I've never seen it to this crazy a level, but I always loved the first round. You got so many series going on. You got teams that maybe had great seasons, but the biggest opportunity for someone to get upset, in my opinion, is the first round before they really get going, before they get acclimatized again to playoff hockey, because it takes a little bit. And we've seen that this year more than ever with three division winners already out. Another one, you know, on the line tonight for the Washington Capitals. It would be the first time in the history of the National Hockey League all four number one seeds went out if the Capitals lose. I personally don't think it'll happen, but I can't say I thought it for any of the other teams either.
Yeah, I know the hot topic, obviously, the Sharks' comeback last night that was fueled by Eakins 5-10, the cross-check of Pavelski. What's your take on what happened last night and some of the fallout and reaction over the last, I guess, 18 hours or so that we've experienced?
My take is really clear and I think concise. I don't know of any other officials in the National Hockey League that would not have called that a five-minute penalty. Just in looking at the circumstances and without the benefit of being able to go over to your DVR and rewind it 20 times and watch to see what actually happened, I got no problem with a call on the ice. I feel terrible for Vegas because it's unfortunate for them. But regardless of what anybody says, I'm 100% convinced there was a penalty there. Not 100% sure it was a five-minute penalty, and yet I understand why the refs made that call. I think when you see a player down, and if you've been around hockey for a long time, when hockey players fall, you know if they're injured or not, just by the way they lay there, the way they hit, what have you. It's instinctual. I knew Joe Pavelski was in a whole world of hurt when he fell down. When you add in the blood and potentially being unconscious for at least a few seconds, those are things that all play into that call. The officials are human. They don't get to go rewatch it. And yet they're tasked with trying to make the right call. In this particular case, with the rules and the different avenues that are at their disposal at that time, I think they did exactly what I would have expected them to do.
Independent of that call and what the result of that power play was and San Jose going on to win the game, should there be more review? Should there be more assistance to some of the officials given just how difficult the job is and the technology that we have at our disposal now?
I think you have to respect that the National Hockey League has made a conscious effort to also, you know, consider the real world. Like, no one's showing up for a hockey game if it takes 4.5 hours. Is that what's going to happen if we review just five-minute majors? Probably not, but, you know, you got to make sure you got a point where you can stop, because obviously we've got goalie interference now. Obviously, we've got offsides. Now we could add five-minute majors. We could add puck shot over the glass. We could add too many men on the ice. We can go on and on and on with this. It's not practical, and you have to have some of that in your repertoire in order to keep things on track. That doesn't mean I don't think the National Hockey League will take a look at this at some point, but it'll be far removed from right now. It'll be under quieter circumstances, and I would imagine there'll be some research and due diligence behind it before it even gets to be something that's considered. It has been talked about in the past, and it's been shut down pretty fast by the, certainly by the general managers. Could that change in the future? Yeah, maybe. Absolutely, maybe. After seeing what happened to Vegas, it's possible. But I will tell you this. When I look at that game, that penalty did not mean that Vegas had to lose. We've had like 8,447 playoff games, and only once has another team in all those times when a major was called scored four power play goals on it. So it was a very, very rare event. The way it played out is the way it played out. It was unfortunate for Vegas. It was not meant to be.
Yeah, I guess like with a puck over the glass, because the Blues took a penalty that was, you know, clearly a puck that was deflected in game five. They killed it off and ended up coming back to win. But, you know, I think the officials get that right like 98% of the time. It wouldn't seem like it would take a ton of time to just have someone upstairs verify it. You know, they kind of take a minute or so to get a guy over to the box and restart play anyway. And, you know, I wonder like about the NFL. They verify every touchdown. It hasn't seemed to slow anything down. If you could just do that with icing, there's probably three instances I can recall this year that the Blues were involved in an offside. At the Blues were involved in an offside challenge after a goal. If you could just verify it, if someone say, "Yep, good goal," you just take any potential error out of it.
Yeah, but I think that people sometimes they think that hockey is like Wimbledon, where a ball is either in or it's out. There's no in between. That's not the case. You know, I can look at this, the cross check by Cody Eakin, and say, well, he didn't cross check him in the face, but he definitely cross checked him. But yet I see other cross checks in the game. I could spin that around and around and around. As a former hockey player, I can tell you that I always accepted that there was some variance, particularly on the things that are arbitrary. What I didn't like is when things were clear cut. And I think that's how the National Hockey League has approached it. Is a puck in or not, right? And when you can't tell, you revert back to the call on the ice. Is, you know, for the offside, it's been more of a challenge because we don't have any rules that really deal with the vertical plane of the blue line. That's where it's become difficult. But it's not Wimbledon. And when you want to start looking at penalties like that, that is very arbitrary. I don't think there's any way that you can definitively do it. We already see this when we have the Department of Player Safety handing out suspensions. So you're talking about Pandora's box. I think the National Hockey League is going to really take their time before they go that far.
You can watch NHL Network analyst Brian Lawton on NHL Tonight, which will air before every Stanley Cup game and after every Stanley Cup playoff game. Check them out on NHL Network. Brian, finally, just your thoughts on the St. Louis Blues, this matchup against Dallas, and the path that both the Blues and Dallas have taken to meet in the second round.
I tip my cap to both organizations. The Dallas Stars, you know, their kind of transformation into a playoff-ready team, it really started probably in December, not unlike the Blues, who were just a short time after that when things came together for them. With Dallas, it was the calling out of their star players, Jamie Benn and Tyler Seguin. Very unusual move. The president of the team was blatantly honest about how disappointed they were in those guys. From that point forward, I certainly feel like Tyler Seguin, who hit a career mark this year with 80 points, took it to heart. Jamie Benn, on the other hand, he didn't play as well as I would have expected him, but in the first round, he was an absolute beast. It's going to be really, really difficult for the St. Louis Blues to handle him if he brings his A game the way he did against the Nashville Predators. St. Louis Blues, on the other hand, it's a tale of two seasons for them. And it's not even from the moment that Craig Berube took over. It's more like from the moment when Craig Berube went to work on, I don't want to say restructuring, but straightening out the locker room. St. Louis Blues, critical point that something was amiss for, something that fooled all of us analysts that thought the Blues would be amazing right from the start last year, and they weren't. As a matter of fact, they were terrible at times. But I give them a ton of credit for pulling it together, making some hard decisions, and then the players buying in and what they needed to do to be successful. They have looked magnificent. They've been brilliant. Can they keep it going? It's not going to be easy against Dallas, but they have to be really encouraged, recognizing what's happened this year in the playoffs, and that is that as wide open as I have ever seen in my life. and I've been involved with the National Hockey League as a player since 1983.
Again, check out Brian Lawton and everyone on NHL Network on NHL Tonight, which will air before and after every Stanley Cup playoff game. Blues and Stars get going tomorrow. Brian, appreciate the time, man. Enjoy round two, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you very much. Best of luck to the St. Louis Blues.
Back to the GL International Realty guest line in a moment. Sean Shapiro gives us a Dallas perspective next on KMOX.
We are the voice of Cardinal Nation, America's sports voice, KMOX.
Can we go back?
All right, Sean Shapiro covers the Dallas Stars for The Athletic. Subscribe at theathletic.com. He's on his way to St. Louis. And, Sean, I guess compared to Winnipeg, St. Louis for the next couple of days might feel like Cancun.
Yeah, it's also I can fly there directly, too. That's the other thing. I can't getting to and from Winnipeg would not have been the easiest thing in the world. So
the direct flights, right?
Yep. The direct flights from Dallas to St. Louis are wonderful, and we'll make there's no 8-hour travel days to get to one city. So I'm very happy with this.
Where is the Stars team right now, Sean, and how do you see this matchup? I think the interesting thing is that while Dallas, you know, controlled the regular season series, we saw three of those matchups while the Blues are actually playing really well, and Dallas, you know, still handled them.
Yeah, that's the most interesting thing to me about when you initially look at the Dallas's record against St. Louis, your first thought is how many of those games came before St. Louis really hit that turnaround. And the Stars are one of the teams that didn't get St. Louis till later in the year and really saw them at that point. So they are a team that I don't think the Stars ever saw, to be fair though, I don't think the Stars ever saw the Blues when they had everyone healthy, which is another thing that comes into play. But the Stars are a team that have played their best hockey down the stretch. You look at where they've really been over the last 2 months of the season, they really bought into this defensive identity. They became much better as a group and more as a collective, they improved. And then really in this past playoff series, I really think they've started to look like the team Jim Montgomery thought he would have, because he thought it would be more of a puck possession, more of an offensive team, and they weren't really able to be that for most of the season because of injuries and not really having that second line. And with Matt Zuccarello coming in really for just being a playoff addition, almost only played two regular season games, they really have a two-line system and a top six with two threats in the top six there. And all of a sudden, the Stars look like a well-rounded team that they really weren't for most of the year just because of personnel and how things were working offensively.
If there's one question for Dallas headed into the series, what is it?
The question for Dallas is, will that second line continue to produce? Because we know that first line of Jamie Benn, Tyler Seguin, and Alexander Radulov, we know they're going to be a threat. And we saw what they did against Nashville. But will the Stars be able to get the depth scoring? Will there be enough that, A, allows that could be a key goal to win a game, or B, will it enough to take the pressure off Jamie Benn and Tyler Seguin and Alexander Radulov? Will the Stars be able to have their second line, which right now is Zuccarello, Hintz, and Dickinson, will they do enough that allows that top line to stay together where Jim Montgomery doesn't have to juggle things? That's the biggest thing. Will the depth scoring continue? Because if it does, that just makes that top line even more dangerous.
Subscribe to The Athletic at theathletic.com. Sean Shapiro with us. Is there any bad blood between these teams? It felt like, and the Blues came off like an incredible series against the Blackhawks, finally beat them a couple of years ago, and a series with the Stars went to 7 games. But is there any dislike between these two teams, despite being in the same division?
Yeah. I don't think there's that much dislike.
Right.
I think there's some – I think there's definitely some old wounds for some of the players that were around when the Blues beat the Stars in 2016, but there's been a lot of roster turnover since then. I guess the biggest bad blood would just be the fact Jamie Benn always seems to play well against this team, and then there's that moment where Jamie Benn literally sits on the Blues captain behind the net, and I just think that series has been since this series has been finalized,
and
that's the closest thing. I mean, you know what? That's probably the best sign that there's no bad blood, because if there was bad blood, you get your captain gets sat on, something happens.
Yeah, it's I think a very very good point. Well, subscribe to The Athletic. Sean's great coverage. Jeremy Rutherford here in St. Louis. All of the great national NHL coverage during the Cup playoffs. Of course, Cardinals and more. TheAthletic.com. Also, give Sean a follow on Twitter at Sean Shapiro, S-E-A-N, Shapiro. You can also check out the book that he is an author of, and an adorable photo of his child with his book at a book signing. Sean, safe travels, man. We'll see you at the rink in the morning.
Yep, guys. Can't wait to talk to you tomorrow.
All right, thanks, brother. That's Sean Shapiro with us on the Munganass St. Louis Honda Mitsubishi Sports Open Line. Like, yeah, selfishly, I wanted Nashville because I was like, man, Nashville and the Blues kind of hate each other. Like, we've seen Chicago and Nashville, because of the postseason, really develop just a nasty, intense dislike. And I was hoping for that, but you know, I guess hoping because Dallas is really, 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 really good as well. That's going to do it for us. Thank you to Tom Ackerman, Chris Kerber, Brian Lawton, Sean Shapiro. Thank you to Ben Boyd, our executive producer, Mike Anderson, my guy back in the KMOX studio. I'll talk to you tomorrow, 8 o'clock pregame. We'll have extended Blues pregame before that, starting at 6:15 with the Strike Zone and more from Enterprise Center. Chris Raby saying, be nice to each other, and as always, peace.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.